It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, Southern Colorado's only show dedicated to college athletics, University of Fish.
Oh man, I think the clock is slow.
Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
Good Saturday morning, and you're thinking to yourselves, just like I do every now and then, where do we go from here? Final Four's done. Women's Final Four is done. So what do we do? Well, we still got college baseball that's going to be coming on strong here in the next couple months. Also, college hockey wraps up tonight. The DU Pioneers have a chance to win the national title as they'll skate on the ice against Minnesota Duluth. So big game there. And then college baseball, like I said. And then we've got spring football. Air Force football having their spring game today up at Falcon Stadium. So see, there's still going to be lots going on. But how much of that am I talking about today? None. We're going to be talking to North Carolina about their big win, their Roy Williams' third national championship since he took the head spot there with the Tar Heels. And then we'll be talking to South Carolina. Why? Because they won the women's championship Sunday night. Because UConn got beat by Mississippi State just a couple days before. We told you about that last week. You heard the audio. And then coming up in just a moment, 1978, Heisman Trophy winner. 1980, NFL Rookie of the Year. Second in the Heisman voting in 1979. He'll talk about that here in a second. Billy Sims, University of Oklahoma running back, he will be joining us here on Fish on University of Fish. So big show lined up for you, and then we have Fish's lecture. We're going to talk about fake news and journalism students who aren't doing their job. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a power-packed hour here on Extra Sports 1300. I am the professor. You're listening to the University of Fish.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
Welcome back to the University of Fish. There's not very many times that I get to say this. I'm sitting down with a childhood hero of mine. We're talking about someone who, when he was in high school, 38 consecutive 100-yard games.
Wow, I had forgot about that.
You forgot about that. 441 carries in a season.
Oh, yeah.
And all of this at Hooks, Texas.
Yes, and people probably wonder, where is Hooks, Texas?
Well, wow. I think they call it the home of Jeremiah Trotter, don't they?
No, they still call it Hooks, Texas.
And if you're wondering what they call it, they call it the home of Billy Sims, the 1978 Heisman Trophy winner, runner-up in 79. That kid from USC didn't deserve it.
No, he had a great season.
He did have a great season. Billy Sims went to the University of Oklahoma, so you know I'm happy to sit here and talk with him.
Boomer Sooner, baby.
That's right. Okay. Now, let's talk about, we won't talk about Texas high school football, but I will ask you, how did you get to Texas? How did you get out of Texas? How did Barry Switzer come in and go, hey.
Let me give you a little background myself. Originally, I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, by birth.
And you're a baseball player.
Big Cardinals fan. Yeah. No birds. I mean, I grew up thinking I was going to be the next Bob Gibson. I was a left-handed pitcher, played center field and first base. So, still to this day, baseball is my first love.
Yeah.
And I relocated to Texas, lived with my grandparents. Well, everybody in Texas played football. And I didn't start playing football until the 10th grade because I didn't want to get hit. I thought that was a crazy game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and at that time, I'm 61 now. I'll be 62 in September. Inner city black kids, we played baseball.
Exactly.
That's all. We played baseball.
Grab your stick, go out in the street.
Yeah, in the street, exactly. When I get to Texas, well, they play football, and I'm thinking, that can't be fun. You got 11 guys chasing one guy with the ball. Just give them the ball. They'll stop chasing you.
Yeah, but when you're the fastest guy on the field.
But like I said, 10th grade, I came out, but running back wasn't my first position. Linebacker, because I wanted to hit the guy.
Oh, yeah.
Also, because we had a terrible team, whole lot of running, no blocking. Well, lo and behold, the second game of the season, the two guys in front of me, they get hurt. Well, ain't nobody left but me. And I'm thinking, oh, no, it's going to be terrible. Of course, it was starting out. And out of fear, I became a running back because I didn't want to get hit. And that's how it happened.
And then 38 games later.
Yeah.
I mean, 100 yards.
Well, I'm going to tell you about that 38 game. True story. We got better. Well, after every home win, I get to eat a chicken fried steak dinner. And I said, wow, this is pretty good. So I was running for those chicken fried steak dinners, not the 100-yard game.
We did the same thing 127 miles north in McAllister, Oklahoma.
Oh, McAllister, yes.
And our coach would call all the scrubs on the team chicken fries.
Okay.
Because they were on the team to get the chicken fry after the game.
Exactly.
To get the chicken fry after the game. Okay, now let's move on to Oklahoma.
Okay.
Barry Switzer gets you up there.
Right. Well, actually, before that, I was headed to Baylor.
Really?
Grant Taft.
Yeah.
Was the head coach, and it was pretty good because they had won the Southwest Conference that year in 74.
That was right after Singletary left.
No, Singletary. No. This is before because I'm older than Singletary.
Okay.
This is in the 70s. Singletary came in the late 70s, early 80s. So my grandmother fell in love with Coach Taft. They're Baptist. We're Baptist. So I'm going to Waco.
Oh, yeah. If you're Baptist, you're going to Baylor.
That's okay.
And I'll be talking more about Baylor later, but not on a good note.
Right, on a good note. But Grant Taft, great guy. But one thing led to another. I went to Oklahoma, and I met Coach Switzer and had a chance to meet the great Bud Wilkinson at that time.
Yes.
This is 74.
Oh,
he's still around. And I'm thinking, wow, I know who he is, and his tradition and everything. And I get ready to go home. Well, I wore number 20 in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going home, and Coach said, well, I want you to meet my family first. So I meet his family. They come out there. And this is before I knew about his great recruiting policies.
Yes.
They all had on number 20. I'm thinking, wow. And Coach said, you know what? They're already selling your jersey number up here. He's recruiting me, but I don't know this.
Exactly.
So on the weekend, I'm usually pumping gas. Where Hooks, Texas is, we're not that far from Idabel, Oklahoma.
No, you're not. Idabel Warriors.
That's right. And I could listen to the game. I'm listening to Oklahoma. Matter of fact, they was up here in Colorado. 1974, they won the national championship, and I was pumping gas at the gas station, and one of my friends came to me and said, Coach Switzer want to talk to you. I'm thinking, wait a minute, he's at the game. How is he going to talk to me? True enough, you remember the pay phones?
Yes.
Well, I went in there and asked Coach Switzer on the phone, and I'm thinking, Coach, you got a game. I'm listening to it on the radio. He said, well, yeah, we up by 30 points, and I didn't have anything to tell my players, and I was thinking about you. He's still recruiting me. He's turning up the heat again.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, wow. So I can hear the referee come in and say, Coach, you got to get on the field. Getting ready to kick off. He said, you hear that number 20? I said, yeah. He said, well, if you recommit and come to this great university, I'm going to promise you two things. I'm thinking, okay. I said, what's that, Coach? He said, first of all, I'm going to make sure you get your degree before you leave, which I did. And two, you're going to win the Heisman Trophy, which I did.
Which you did. You almost did it twice.
Almost did it twice. So that's how that happened. Yeah, and I'm thinking, yeah, sure. But anyway, it happened. Come to find out, he told Kenny King, Thomas Lott, everybody the same story.
Oh, well, you had to. You had to. I mean, if you didn't have the pockets SMU did, you had to back then.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's talk. My favorite game that I've ever saw you play.
Okay.
247 against Nebraska.
In Norman.
Yes.
My senior year. Yeah.
247 against Nebraska, who had the number one defense in the nation.
In the nation at that time. The week before that, we played Missouri, and I had a great game against them, 200-something yards. And, of course, that senior year was my last year. And get Coach Switzer to tell it. He always cries when he tells it. He's so emotional at times, tell this story. And we was in practice before the game, before they came to town. And I was on the sideline because they was practicing the kicking game, which I wasn't involved in that. He came over and told me, he said, well, it's going to be your last game coming up. And we was a young team that year, too.
Yeah.
I lost my offensive line, a lot of guys from the year before. And he said, those black shirts are pretty tough. I said, yeah, Coach, I know. He said, well, you had a great game last week against Missouri. You think you got one more in you? I said, Coach, I saved my best for the last.
There you go.
Sure did.
And then followed that up with a win in the Orange Bowl against Florida State.
Florida State, yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about current running backs.
Okay.
When we look at the draft, you've got Leonard Fournette, Dalvin Cook.
Got a lot of great backs.
Christian
out there.
McCaffrey.
Yeah, great guy.
And then you have Joe Mixon.
Yeah, Joe Mixon. And P-Ryan.
Oh, and P-Ryan.
Of course, I'm number two now. You know
that. I was going to get to P-Ryan, and he had another year to play.
Yes, he did.
He had another year to play, but then again, your freshman, sophomore year, injuries.
Well, I didn't even play my sophomore year.
No.
Yeah, I got hurt myself.
Yeah, and then
my freshman year, I knew I wasn't going to play because I had a great player there, Joe Washington.
Yes.
With Steve Davis, the quarterback, the Selman brothers. You know all that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But of those, who do you think the most talented is between Fournette, Cook, McCaffrey, and Mixon?
I tell you what, they all can do different things. And I like Mixon. I had a chance. He could do blocking, come out of the backfield, catch the pass. A lot of people don't think he's going to get drafted, but he's going to get drafted.
He'll be drafted. But
maybe late first round
exactly.
or early second.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But how would that have changed when you were there? Because I think social media is what made this a story. Because back then, Bob Berry wouldn't have had it in a newscast.
No. Well, you know, back then, a lot of colleges and stuff, and I'm glad it wasn't social media back then.
Oh, I know. I bet. I went to school in Norman. I know.
Yeah, especially when you're in college, you're young, you do crazy things. So, yeah.
But now let's talk about P. Ryan, because we have someone who school's all-time leading rusher.
Yes.
And saying that at Oklahoma is something to say when you look at the running backs that have come through there.
No question about it.
I think he would be one of the most versatile backs in the NFL because of his power, and he does have the soft hands.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to help somebody, no question about it. But I like the fact with Joe Nixon, he's more – elusive.
Yes.
A little faster.
You got that breakaway speed.
And P-Ron's more of a downhill runner. Not as elusive as Joe Nixon. And that's the only really difference. But both of them are great backs.
Now, I wish I could say that you were here to hang out with me.
Right.
I mean,
well,
I am
right now.
Oh, I know. I wish I could say that's the sole reason you're here. But you're in town because got something opening up later today. Billy Sims Barbecue. The first location in Colorado, there you already have them in.
We're in about six, seven states.
Six, seven
close
states.
Close to 60 stores.
A lot of them in Oklahoma. And Michigan because of your Detroit ties.
Right.
First NFL running back to have 3 touchdowns in their first game.
Well.
See, I know about you a little bit. Just a little bit. You know, poster on the wall when I was a kid.
You know, the thing about that draft, we didn't have a combine back then. I never forget they sent a scout to Norman. You know how we used to go under the stadium and run? Because we didn't have a work in.
Exactly.
Dome and all that stuff like they do now. And he had me, it was cold that day. I was in my warm up. And he said, well, go ahead and let's get ready to run. So I ran about a couple of 40s in my warm up. And I got a 4.4, 4.5, 4.4.
Don't brag.
No, I'm just saying.
I know.
I'm warming up. So
I
said, well, can I take my stuff off? I can do it again. He said, oh, no, that's good enough. He said, we drafted. We ain't going to trade you no way. So when they say I was first round, first pick sound pretty good, then they said, until you know where you're going, I said, Detroit. I'm like, Detroit?
Hey, but you got him to back-to-back playoff appearances.
Barry
didn't do that.
Yeah.
Barry didn't
another great that. Number 20. You know,
yes.
I see Barry a lot in Michigan because he still lives there.
Yeah.
And you know what? OU didn't even recruit him. Go
no.
figure that one.
Or his son.
Or his son.
But anyway, Billy Sims Barbecue.
Yes.
Opening up later today. You'll be signing autographs 11-1. And first off, it's barbecue. You got to love that.
Yeah.
You throw in a Heisman Trophy winner, NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year. Why'd you choose Colorado? Why Colorado Springs?
Well, we have some people that actually, this is how we got to Colorado. They was from Owosso, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And they were retired, and they wanted to look at the barbecue business because our headquarters are in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And we're a little over 60-something stores. We're between Oklahoma and Michigan now. We're finna open Kansas City next month and other places. And they decide to get into the franchise business, and they moved out here. And this is where they wanted to put it. I said, wow, that's great. So we're hopefully get out here and have a good showing, and people like the food. Most people is barbecue lovers, regardless of where you're from. If it's good, they'll try it.
Exactly. And you can't go wrong with brisket. You can't go wrong with pulled pork.
And what we do, we started this business, myself and one partner, in 2004 when the economy was soft, And I never thought this was going to work. I'm thinking one or two stores in Oklahoma because of the football and name and all that. And lo and behold, 2004 to now, we have over 60-something stores and still growing. And we just kind of keep it simple, attitude, bare-bone barbecue, keep it fresh, consistent. Customers are number one. And we don't fry anything, so everything is smoked.
Well, and you want bare-bone barbecue because you want that meat to fall off the bone.
Oh, yes.
I love that. Talking with Billy Sims, 1978 Heisman Trophy winner. It's been a pleasure to have you this morning.
Oh, it's been great being here. It just remember my Big 8 days coming here to Colorado.
So exactly. I got to get one more out of you. Boomer.
Boomer Sooner.
And you might have heard that at a couple Heisman Trophy presentations.
Well, exactly. Recently. I've been doing it since 78. You know,
exactly.
Especially the people in New York accustomed to it.
Exactly, and I'm accustomed to it as well. Billy, thanks for joining us this morning on the University of Fish. We'll be right back.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
It's picked up by Perkins. 5 seconds, 4 seconds. Matthews launching a three on the right wing. That is no good. Hits in the rebound, and redemption is found in the desert. The Tar Heels have won their sixth national title. 71-65, North Carolina. National champions.
Welcome back to the University of Fish, and we are joined from someone in North Carolina right now. Jackson Cowart, how are you doing this morning? You were in Phoenix. Set the tone for us how it was in Phoenix.
Yeah, I'm still getting goosebumps listening to that sound clip right there. It was absolutely insane. I mean, you could tell 10 seconds before that happened that UNC was finally going to pull it off. And, man, that redemption storyline is definitely not overripe. Those players felt it. It was tangible. And it was pretty storybook for UNC fans.
Well, I thought we were going to talk basketball this morning. But then watching what Kennedy Meeks, Hicks, and May did to Karnowski and Collins, and I was like going, this is a football game. It was almost like a rugby scrum down in the box. And I think that is where Carolina won. It was down on the blocks because when you have, you had Williams who went through the game with four fouls. Karnowski had four fouls. Collins fouled out with like 6 minutes left, and Collins was one of their offensive stars of the game. How'd they do it?
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see if Collins didn't foul out, how that game might have been different. But early on, I mean, you talk about Williams-Goss, even he was getting down low, posting guys up. Karnowski was posting up Meeks and getting just close enough to the basket, but not close enough. I mean, Karnowski, I don't think people remember early on, he was getting seemingly everything he wanted in terms of positioning, but
he just couldn't get it in.
Just short.
Yeah, you said he couldn't get it in. He had these
yeah,
points.
Exactly. Yeah, he was.
All he had to do was just drop it in the basket. He's 7'1".
Yeah, I know. See, it's for real. And Meeks got just enough, pushed him just far enough out of the paint to where Karnowski seemingly couldn't get, anything going into the scoring department. And then Collins comes in and he's great. But like you mentioned, those fouls just accumulated. And it was on both sides, too. I mean, it was ugly going both ways. Meeks got called on a couple that were interesting. And Collins, obviously, there was one where it seemed like he barely touched the guy. But you're right. That's what it was. They shut down Gonzaga down low. And then, they could only hit so many threes from the outside to really offset what UNC was doing just enough inside from the line. But like you said, it was an ugly game. And it was just who was going to outlast. And, Gonzaga looked really good. But it was going to be tough to outlast North Carolina in a game that had that much riding for him.
And normally, I mean, I've watched Carolina a lot this year, not near as much as you have, but they've been more of a finesse team and not really a down-and-dirty team. And I know you realize this. I don't know how much it got played into everything, but for the first time all season, the Tar Heels got out-rebounded and won a game.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I saw that how Gonzaga was crashing the boards, I was going, this is going to be, it's their year. It's their year. But they weren't able to put it back. I mean, because they had the offensive boards. I mean, they had 12 offensive boards, 37 defensive boards, and that's not something you hear when you have a Hicks, a Meeks, and a May down low for the Tar Heels. You don't hear about them getting out-rebounded, because even Barry comes up with some big boards from time to time. And it was amazing to me. So anybody already
in post-game interviews, because I know you were there for the post-game press conferences, anybody say, hey, I'm done here, and time for me to move on?
Yeah, no, it was, there's really only one guy, Justin Jackson, who would surprise us with that. I think Joel Berry maybe, but I think I'd be pretty shocked if Joel Berry left, honestly. He had an incredible game, but I think there's still, his frame. It'd be tough for him to make it to the next level at this point without showing a little more, but it really wasn't the focus. I mean, they have the two seniors down low that you've mentioned, Hicks and Meeks, that are both gone. We obviously know that. But Justin Jackson was just kind of soaking it in. I didn't talk to him after. Somebody might have asked him, but I definitely haven't heard anything about it. But they were all just enjoying the moment. It was funny. It was kind of the opposite. Nate Britt, one of the seniors, even said that he expected to keep playing. He thought there was going to be a game again, the game after, and a game after, because he said it just felt like they've been on this vengeance tour that they have to just win game after game. He said he felt it's kind of surprising it was over, but I think we'll hear from Justin Jackson next couple of weeks what he might decide to do. I'd be surprised if he didn't declare for the draft just to test it, but I think this year he might actually be gone.
Because, okay, so you didn't pull Alonzo Ball, who the sweat hadn't even dried off his brow after UCLA played, and he's going, yeah, I'm done here. I mean, that's the first thing he said in the locker room. Yeah, okay, so now you're back in Chapel Hill. What's the mood like on campus?
It's insane. I don't think anybody slept since Monday, to be honest, me included. It's insane. I mean, I don't know if you saw the videos of Franklin Street, the main street north of campus, on Monday night. That place was 55,000 strong. It looked like Chapel Hill was burning down. I mean, it was absolutely insane.
If it was Detroit, it would have been.
What's that?
I said, if you were in Detroit, it would have been burning down. That's how they celebrate in Detroit.
Well, yeah, it was. I mean, the mood in Chapel Hill is been, exactly what you would expect it to be after 364 days of seeing highlights of Chris Jenkins shot, pretty much everywhere. It's been pure ecstasy. People still wearing shirts, professors still talking about it. People in the pit, which is the center of campus, still celebrating and cheering. I mean, it's absolutely insane. This is, I wasn't alive for some of the championships and wasn't here for others, but I imagine that the celebration here matches, if not exceeds, any of the other five titles that USC. I mean, this one has a little extra on top for obvious reasons.
Oh, of course it does, especially with the Villanova loss last year. And so now you're the third or fourth team to lose the year before and come back and win the next year. But
I think it's the fourth, yeah.
Yeah, my question is, where does this put Roy Williams in the lore of North Carolina basketball? Because he now has more than Dean.
Yeah, and people have been talking about that. I think it's really tough to put Roy over Dean Smith just because Dean Smith taught Roy everything he knew, and Dean Smith really built this Carolina basketball program. If it's not for Dean Smith, Roy's not getting three at UNC, and he would readily admit that. He admitted that on the podium. He's definitely in the conversation. When you talk about coaches who have had success at UNC and coaches who have, cultivated that Carolina brand and done what you would expect from a blue blood. I mean, Roy Williams is right up there, and he's, like you said, surpassed what Dean Smith did. But from a lore perspective, I don't think anybody can match Dean. I mean, Dean Smith got murals, his face is on buildings in Chapel Hill, and people still think of him as basically the father. Yeah, if Roy Williams won, two more titles in the next 5 years or something, it might be a conversation. But Dean Smith is epic, godlike status in North Carolina, and I don't think Roy Williams has any intention of surpassing that, and I think it'd be really tough if he did unless he just went insane in the next few years.
Well, Jackson, I want to thank you for joining us the past few weeks as we got through the NCAA tournament. Look forward to talking to you because Carolina does have a pretty good baseball team as well, and then we'll be talking some spring football. But glad you came on with us this morning. When we come back, we're going to be going just a little bit south of Jackson. We're going to South Carolina to talk about the ladies' championship. And it's not Connecticut. You're listening to University of Fish. I am the professor. Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Davis outside left, up top to Gray. She drives, contested, off balance, one-footed shot, off fire. This Wilson, the rebound behind McGowan, spins and sinks on the left. shot clock, 66-52, a one-woman wrecking crew down the stretch. South Carolina had never won a women's basketball national title. The final 5-4-3-2, smiles galore, the horn sounds, and the Gamecocks of South Carolina have their first ever women's basketball national championship.
Okay, we just talked to North Carolina, who won the men's championship. Now we're going right down the interstate to Columbia, South Carolina, to Abe Danaher. How you doing this morning, Abe? Okay, we're working on getting Abe Danaher of the Daily Gamecock in Columbia, South Carolina. The Gamecocks, the Lady Gamecocks, taking on Mississippi State, 67-55, the final score this past weekend as South Carolina wins the NCAA Women's National Championship. Kind of a bittersweet weekend for South Carolina because, you know, they had the Final Four loss in the men's to Gonzaga, and so it was kind of a bittersweet weekend for them. And we've got Abe on the line. I think we do. Abe, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Abe is there. And so, Abe, I'm sorry about the little technical difficulties there. I'm sure Columbia's still drying out, and I'd like to say it's because of all the beverages that were flowing in Little Five Points, but the mighty Catawba decided to run through Little Five Points this past week. Some major flooding in the Columbia, South Carolina area this past week. But how are you doing? What's the mood on campus after the women won the game?
People are ecstatic just about everything in general. The men's Final Four, the women's championship, there's just been an energy really buzzing this entire week through campus.
Okay, now I know you were in Columbia because you didn't make it to Dallas, you didn't make it to Phoenix because you were home manning the sports desk for both events going on at the same time and making sure everything got into print or onto online, wherever, however you did it over the weekend. But where were you on Sunday night?
I was actually in the newsroom.
That's no
I
fun.
I was trying to put everything together. I was getting all the stories in from the women's game. I was looking at all the men's stories, trying to judge that. And we also had spring football last weekend. So we were really doing a juggling act in the newsroom, trying to get the paper together for Monday.
So we'll talk about spring football in a second because I'm interested in what the Gamecocks have coming up this next season. And I've got to tell you, one of my favorite places to watch a college game, other than at the University of Oklahoma where I went, Williams-Brice is a great place to watch a game.
Oh.
I mean, I love it there. I spent many years in South Carolina. So as a disclaimer to anybody that's going, how does he know about South Carolina so much? I lived in Columbia for a while, and it's a beautiful city when it's not underwater. but then again, when you live in the swamps, that's what happens. But let's talk about Wilson, 23 points. And as you heard in the clip as I played when Abe wasn't there, she was a one-woman wrecking crew all night. 23 points. Talk about her performance.
She was amazing. 23 points on 9 of 15 from the field with also 10 rebounds. I mean, she was the centerpiece of that win. You saw her on offense many a time. She was just an utter mismatch from Mississippi State. They couldn't guard her. Playing the smaller lineup that we've gone to in this tournament without Coates, the floor was really spread out, and she kept getting the ball in the high post with a one-on-one matchup. And there's not many people in the nation that can go one-on-one with Asia Wilson.
Now, we're going to shift to the men for a second. Raftery. I don't know if you're listening to your radio call or if you actually were listening to the TV call of the game. But when he was talking about South Carolina, I forget what player he was talking about. He said he's the only one when the team flies that doesn't need a passport. Talking about the international flavor of the Gamecocks. Frank Martin's done a good job assembling this team. Do we see anybody leaving early because of the success they've seen this year?
That's really the question that's buzzing around now after the loss. The big question is, does PJ Dozier stay or go? No one's really sure.
What's your feeling on that?
I think there's a, personally, this
I think he's got a 60% chance of going, 40% of staying. I think he's leaning towards going. I know in his press conference he said he's going to leave it up to his coach and his family to let him figure it out. But I know that his performance, his draft stock went up. I hope he stays. I really do. I think that one more year at South Carolina, this team will be his team next year, and I think it'll allow him to grow. And I think a player should have the team be their team before they go. But I don't know. I can't blame him if he goes.
Okay, now we're talking. We're going to go to spring football. Okay.
Okay.
You've got Will Muschamp there now, and you know, and Will came from Florida. Last time you had a coach from Florida, had some success with the old ball coach. you know, a success that South Carolina hadn't seen in a while. Where are they looking at this year, and who is standing out so far after the spring game?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're on the rise. We got a really young team that finished strong last year, and they gave a lot of people hope about this program. And we're bringing in some great recruits. We brought in the top recruit in South Carolina, and I think the number three recruit in South Carolina, two wide receivers. And that's being paired with Jake Bentley, who is a really good quarterback. He's young. He's just sophomore now. But
has he went
really
through puberty yet? No, I mean, I'm serious because, you know, he should have been a high school senior last year.
Yeah.
And he was starting in the SEC.
He wasn't starting. He was playing well in the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. I mean, because I think back to when I was a senior in high school, I had a problem against seniors in high school.
And I know as a sophomore, I was struggling just doing the paper, and this kid's out playing in SEC football.
Oh, I know. So how did Bentley look in the spring game?
I wasn't there, but from the reporting we did, he played really well. The offense as a whole looked really good, which is not something you'd expect with Muschamp as your coach. You'd expect the defense to come out firing on all cylinders. But Bentley and the whole offense looked really, really good. The offense really lit up the spring game, bringing about some questions on defense. I know the defensive line's in question right now, and we had our top corner actually go down with a broken arm in the game. But the offense looks really good. Edwards out on the outside looks great. We have a transfer that came in from North Carolina, redshirted last year, and is playing now. And I heard that he looked really good, paired with Dowdle, our running back who came on at the end of last season. Our offense seemed to be not the problem, it was our defense.
Now, see, the problem is going to be the defense because, you know, pretty much gave up 200 yards a game in rushing this past season. And that's something they're going to have to shore up because otherwise it's just going to be, okay, South Carolina will jump up and win this game and be a spoiler. I mean, to be a factor in the SEC East, what's it going to take?
Our defense is going to have to look really good, especially our defensive line, which it's a problem right now with that question. But in the SEC, you got to be able to hold the line of scrimmage or make a push, and we got to get some pressure on some quarterbacks. It'll help having Sky Moore return, who played 2 years ago, considered going to the draft, got hurt, and decided to stay last season, medical redshirt, and then he's playing again. Having him back will be huge. Jamarcus King at corner will be big, and we had a couple really good freshmen come in. But I think the question is that defensive line. Can they get pressure? Can they hold the line of scrimmage, or are teams going to be able to run all over us just like last season?
And now let's talk about freshmen coming in, because last year you had one come in early in January, but now he's leaving. And that would be what Muschamp had as his centerpiece of his first program, and that's Brandon McIlwain. Because we talked about the success that Bentley had. McIlwain is a talent, but he just hadn't seen the field. Has he decided where he's transferring to?
I have not heard an official. I've not heard an official report on where he's transferring to. I heard a few schools being tossed around. Not sure if that was rumor or fact. I just know that he made the decision that he believed was best for him, and I know Gamecock Nation as a whole has been pretty supportive of him and have wished him his best.
Okay, now how, because I know I'm jumping from sport to sport on you here, but you know, I know you hold down the sports desk, so I know you can handle it. How's the baseball team looking so far this year?
The baseball team, I think, is looking pretty well. Baseball is actually the one sport that I have not been covering. That's the one sport I don't cover very well.
So we're through talking to you. I'm joking.
That's the one I give to my co-owner. But, baseball, I've heard they've been looking pretty good. And we also have Tebow in town for the Columbia Fireflies, which has been a huge story. And that's gotten a lot of people really excited, too, outside of our university sports. So that's been another big story that's been going on in Columbia.
Well, Abe, thanks for coming on with us this morning on the University of Fish. Look forward to talking a little bit more football with you since we're past basketball now. I'm going to need to get a season preview from you because, you know, it is SEC football. Abe, thanks for coming on this morning.
Thank you very much.
That was Abe Danaher of the Daily Gamecock, Columbia, South Carolina. They're still drying out from the floods this past week, but they are celebrating that women's NCAA title that they won Sunday night over Mississippi State. This is the University of Fish. I am the professor, Extra Sports 1300.
This is the new Extra Sports 1300. Let's take a step out on the quad. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Welcome back to the University of Fish. I am the professor, Tim Fisher. Now, what I had planned to do right here, we're going to talk to a Baylor sports writer for the Daily Lariat, the school paper there at Baylor University, and to talk to him about how the football program rose to prominence and is now being disgraced. They themselves, the Daily Lariat, put out an article about a week and a half ago about two more ex-Baylor players being arrested for sexual assault. We've heard the stories, 52 different sexual assaults by 31 different players. And yeah, what does that mean? A couple of them, at least, were double dipping. And, you know, this just isn't right. You know, come on, people. And then, so I call Baylor. I'm in contact with them. I'm going, yeah, we'd love to. Let me check our paper's policy. So all I get back is a text. Mr. Fisher, when it comes to the Baylor football scandal, I have no comment. Come on. A week before, you'd put out an article telling me how two more players got arrested. What is the university trying to cover up? Aren't we teaching these kids to actually be journalism students, dig in, get the story, report the truth? Is the Baylor Journalism School, is it now like the minor leagues for CNN and MSNBC? Are we teaching them to cover fake news? Your journalism students, you go after the story, you let the story be heard. And this story is being heard. It's being heard nationally. The New York Times has if you print it out online, it's a 15-page story. Now, if you're familiar with newspapers or how a newspaper is laid out, column inches come very, very expensive, especially in a paper like the New York Times. So for them to put aside as much space in that paper as they did for this story, it tells you that it's huge. Working on talking with the attorney who has filed a lawsuit, a civil lawsuit against the university on behalf of a female who was sexually assaulted by a player at a party. We'll go into more of that in just a moment. Now, but I want to give you some background on this attorney. John Clune, he's a Boulder attorney. He's going to be talking with us. He couldn't make it today because he's in flight, and, you know, they do frown on you using your phones on planes. I don't understand why. Unless you have a Galaxy S7, then that makes sense because it's going to explode on you. But he was the attorney who brought the civil case against Kobe Bryant in Summit County for his sexual assault. He was the attorney that had was the plaintiff attorney against Jameis Winston for his sexual assault when he's at Florida State. So this man knows what he's talking about, and he has taken on the cause of this young lady from Baylor who was sexually assaulted by one of her friend's boyfriends. They were at a party, you know, and that happens in college. I know you know that. I know that. They're at a party, maybe some adult beverages for some people that weren't adults yet, but, you know, little drinking. And he's like going, hey, your friend wants to see you outside. She hadn't seen her friend in a couple hours, and she's going, okay. And he starts dragging her through the party outside to a private area. And when he started being as rough getting her there, she knew something was going on. She knew, and she kind of had a feeling of what he was going to do. And sadly enough, he did it. And that is, and you think, okay, it happened once, bad seed. But you have 51 other instances on record at Baylor. 51. I mean, let's just grasp that number for a second. And you've heard, if you listen to the show, which I know you do, a couple months ago, we were talking about how Joe Mixon is so different than, you know, the sexual assault cases, because hitting someone one time, that's an act of passion. It doesn't require thought. Sexual assault requires thought because, okay, I've done this. Now I'm going to move on to do this. It is premeditated. It may not be premeditated, but as soon as it starts, it requires conscious thought to continue in the action. A heat of passion, punching a jaw to a girl, although he did drop her, it was the heat of passion. So you cannot compare the Joe Mixon case to what's going on at Baylor, what happened at Minnesota, what's happened all over the country in college football. It's an epidemic, and it needs to stop. And a lot of people think, okay, you know, you're going light on Mixon because he's an Oklahoma guy. That could be part of the case. Yeah, I could be a bit jaded there. But what did we find out this past week? Happened in Norman just a few years ago. We have a player, Lawrence Moore, L.J. Moore. He was a backup defensive player, defensive back, never saw a lot of action on the field. So I guess he decided to make his own action. So he started pimping out a cheerleader at Oklahoma. The young lady, Micah Parker, I'm bringing her name out because it is public record, because I'm sitting here looking at her mugshot, and let me tell you, not a very flattering mugshot. She's a beautiful young girl, but then again, when has a mugshot been flattering unless you're the teardrop guy that got all the social media buzz because of the hot mugshot guy? Mugshots aren't flattering. But here we got Lawrence Moore, this player who would take her to Oklahoma City, put her in this like roach motel, and then have people come in and have sex with her for $200 a pop. Now, if he was, you know, advertising, yeah, it's a no-you cheerleader, yeah, I'm sure that 200, you know, in that area, probably real easy to come by. But this one time, it was a vice detective that decided to show up because he had been advertising on Backpage.com. If you don't know what that is, you're doing good. Stay off of Backpage.com. I think they've actually shut that down, at least their casual encounters area. There have been a lot of problems, a lot of sexual assaults that have come from that site. But when they showed up, not only were there, the sexual act that was being paid for, you also have, there was codeine, which is a prescription drug, you know, prescription painkiller. And something that wouldn't have been real bad if they were in Colorado, but they were in Oklahoma. Big, big smell of pot all over the room. And so what does Micah Parker do when the cops come? She's tossing several cell phones into the toilet. We've all seen the movies where people, you know, they get busted with drugs, they put it in the toilet and flush it down. Something like that will flush pretty easily. I don't see an iPhone 7 flushing real easily. granted, the water's going to short it out and everything's, you may not be able to recover stuff, but you pull out that SIM card, you're going to get everything off the phone anyway. So it was just an ignorant move on the young lady's part. I don't want to put any of the blame on her. I don't. But she could have stepped out and said, hey, this is going on. I need some help. And she, but now see, Micah Parker, this young lady, she's the daughter of Oklahoma's cheerleading coach. That's how, I mean, she's a good looking girl. She was, and she did a very fine job as a cheerleader, but she's had many run-ins with the law. So she was off on a bad path anyway, which, you know, it happens to people. It does. But I've got to tell you, this epidemic of sexual assault, of prostitution, of these football players thinking they are above the law and can do anything they want, it's got to stop. It's got to stop. How are we going to do that? Well, we heard a couple weeks ago from a young lady who goes to these schools and talks to these players on how to treat women. You shouldn't need a seminar on how to treat women. Because, I mean, granted, a lot of these inner city kids, and I'm not trying to make this a thing of color. I promise you, I'm not trying to make this a thing of color. But a lot of these inner city kids who grow up without fathers, you know, you always hear about how strong the mother is in these relationships. The mother needs to be a little stronger. Yes, the dad needs to be there, but the mother needs to be a little stronger to tell her sons how to treat women. What she has experienced is not what they should put women through in their own experiences in life. Because when you do that, all you do is foster this behavior. And it goes from generation to generation to generation. You've got to stop it in the home. If you're a mom or a dad out there, make sure that your sons know how to treat women. But on the same token, make sure your women, your daughters, know how to respect men. It's that easy. Just common, decent respect for people, which is obviously not happening at Baylor. It's not happening with this young man from Oklahoma who is pimping out this young cheerleader. It's a sad state, but we're going to get through. I'm the professor. You've been listening to University of Fish right here on Extra Sports 1300. We'll see you next week.